A week ago Sunday, I was in the United States, just came back last night, and that day was, of course, a Yom Tov Shein Kamoh. I just want to first read an article that I happened to see, and it begins the following. Who doesn't love a holiday? For most, it means time off from work or school. Religious holidays are exactly that, need no explanation. On legal holidays, banks may be closed, the stock market shuts down, no mail service. There's no shortage of legal holidays, she writes. Memorial Day, Labor Day, Independence Day, Veterans Day, and then there's that all-time favorite, Thanksgiving Day. And she describes how people enjoy turkey, and adults can sleep late, at least the men can. Women are usually in the kitchen at the crack of dawn. Children can spend an entire day playing, and a major delight for everyone. Young and old, stores offering huge sales, etc., etc. But then there's another type of holiday, usually celebrated on Sunday, a presidential proclamation. Woodrow Wilson, one of the presidents of the United States in 1914, established the first National Mother's Day holiday. But in fact, long before that, there was an annual celebration dating back to the Roman Empire, honoring mothers and fathers. Father's Day is a lot newer. That might surprise people. And she goes on to have a lengthy discussion about that. But then she points out the newest holiday of them all. And that is, of course, Sunday, not honoring a president, a parent, a veteran, not a federal holiday, not a state holiday. Alas, there are no day after department store sales. Turkey rarely makes an appearance on the table. It's not a religious holiday in the literal sense, but there's such fervor on this day that it might very well be. It is known as Super Bowl Sunday. And she goes on to describe the nature of this Yom Tov, and I experienced it. I experienced it actually in a very fulsome kind of way. First, I went to Daven Mincha Ma'ariv that day, and the entire discussion, both during Mincha, Chazar Sashatz, between Mincha and Ma'ariv, and actually even during Kriya Shema, by the fellow sitting next to me, was relating to the Giants and what is exactly going to be. Shkia being around 516, so everything took place prior to Shkia. Matter of fact, one person told me it could be that he's putter from davening because there's an Easter of Hesach Hadas from the game, and he was missing the pre-game analysis and forget about the post-game analysis, and it's literally an entire day. Anyway, I went to buy something to eat for supper. I had not eaten that entire day. And in the course of buying something to eat, I went into a store, and there people were, I don't know how to describe it. The store actually sold these popper-type things, and all types of, different types of crispy chicken legs and what have you. People ordered hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Anyway, I asked the proprietor, the storekeeper, how much money he made today. He told me today he made $14,000. A small little mom-and-pop operation. $14,000 from the Super Bowl, which is rather astounding. Who walked into the store? I'll tell you who walked into the store. Not, you would expect, well, this is in a frum neighborhood, obviously, but who walked into the store were all types of people, primarily yeshivisha types, people with tzitzis out, people with tcheles, without tcheles, everyone imaginable, people with black hats. There was such an excitement in the atmosphere, and it was really... I really couldn't fully understand from Kuli Grass. I'm not from the great sports fans, that's for sure. To understand, but yeah, I know who the New York Giants are, and I actually saw the last half hour of the game. I was okay to see the last half hour of the game. People were jumping up and down where I was. They were into it beyond belief. They were dancing, they were singing anytime any single play occurred. There was such a slavus and such excitement and such a srakshus. And I'm talking about men and women. And it was really an amazing thing to me. And as I said, it occupied the entire Jewish world. I came actually on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos, I heard a lot of discussion about the upcoming football game, what's going to be. I imagine partially because it's New York against Boston. These are classic rivals for many, many years. But it was amazing to me the kind of fervor that exists even in the Orthodox Jewish world and even in the so-called yeshiva world, even in the so-called Torah world, relating to this event. Of course, to my mind, I don't exactly view it the way others view it. I didn't get too excited one way or the other. The fact that the Giants won It was mamish all the way down to the very, literally to the very last second, and that seemed to be exciting to many people. Aaron Rosenblum asked me, is any Easter B'davar? Is there any prohibition in watching the Giant Game? And my response was, no, there's no Easter B'davar, except for the commercials. That's Easter, also Min HaTorah, Min HaRabbanan, and every other Easter imaginable. But aside from the commercials, everything else is fine. Everything else is wonderful. Everything else is a mitzvah, the chatchila, a hidur mitzvah, the haisa, the rabbanon. The reason why I mention this is because I was so taken by the fact that one event can actually have such a massive kind of impact on people. It was absolutely shocking to me. But not completely, because as I said, there's no Easter B'davar in terms of the football game itself. It's probably the kind of relaxation, the kind of leisure that involves the least number of Yisurim. Most other types of leisure involve many Yisurim, but this is relatively harmless, relatively mild, and kind of very enjoyable as well. And so Baruch Hashem, I don't think there's any Easter B'davar, just as long as you turn off the commercials, which apparently I was told we're talking about $1 million for 30 seconds. Is that correct? What was that? $3.5 million. You could feed all of America. You could more or less take care of Obama's entire so-called medical program. Unbelievable. I mentioned that because I think it's relevant to this week's Parsha Mishpatim. How is that, you'll ask? There's a very famous bris that the Torah has at the end of Parsha Mishpatim, a Krisas bris that takes place where the pasuk says, Yel Moshe Amar Alei Al Hashem, Atov the Arab and other Rabbi Meshiv Mizik the Yisrael Mishtachavisim Meirochok. There's a big machlokes in Rashi and Ramban, actually machlokes in the Mechilta, when this bris takes place, prior to Matan Torah, after Matan Torah. This is a very lengthy discussion. There's a very famous comment that the Bris Karov in his Perash Al Torah, the Rizal Levi, where he's asking, why did the Torah divide Matan Torah into two parshios? There's one parsha, as I said, which is found in Yisrael, where we just read this last week, Perak Yitesh, Bachodesh HaShlishi, the Hakdamah to Kabbalah HaTorah, Bayom HaZeh Bo Midbar Sinai, and then there's a parsha, the end of Mishpatim, which we read this coming Shabbos. Why do we need two parshas? So the Bris Karov explains, because there are really two elements to Matan Torah, and this is how he describes it. One element he calls the element of Kabbalah HaTorah, or Maimon HaSinai, the fact that we're obligated to receive the Torah, to accept the Torah. And the second, the Bris Karov says, what he calls Kenisa LeBris, entering the covenant. These are two totally separate commitments that Klal Yisrael made. And he refers to a Mechilta. The Mechilta says, Kenin Shirah Shekiblu Aleihem, once Hashem saw that Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael accepted upon themselves the Torah, not al Hadam Mizorak al Ha'am, that's when the bris at the end of Mishpatim takes place. Hashem sprinkles the blood on the people. Amalei Harei Atem Kshurim Anuvim Mitzvusim. You are now, in effect, committed, tied, bound to Hashem Yisbarach. And therefore, these two parshas, one parsha specifically refers to Kabbalah HaTorah. That's the parsha of Yisrael, Perek Yitesh, that we just read this past Shabbos. And then there's a second parsha, which the Bris Karov calls the parsha of Kabbalah HaBris. The parsha actually of entering the covenant, the Gemara actually says in Chagiga, and the Gemara describes in Krisus, that Klal Yisrael entered the bris, b'mila u'tvila v'atzas damin. There were three aspects, the three elements that were responsible for our entering the bris. One is we underwent circumcision. Number two, we immersed ourselves. And number three, there was hazras dam, or if you will, hatzas damim. And that's the parsha that's found at the end of Mishpatim. Of these two parshas, it would seem that which one is the more critical? Which one is more significant? It seems rather obvious that the most significant one is the one that's found at the end of Mishpatim, not the one in Yisrael. The one in Yisrael simply represents a commitment, a shibud to Torah, and a shibud to Hashem Yisbarach. Mashenkin, the parsha at the end of Mishpatim, seems to be already far more encompassing and far more demanding and far more, a far greater commitment than the one that one sees in the parsha of Yisrael. And that's what I would like to discuss now, these two different types of commitment that the Torah actually has described in these two parshas. And I'll just mention, I'll mention it in the context of a number of psukim. And when you examine the psukim that are found in Yisrael and the psukim that are found in Mishpatim, there are a number of fundamental distinctions between the articulation in Yisrael and the articulation in Mishpatim. And probably these reflect two different kedushas of Klal Yisrael at two different levels. First we have the psukim that the Torah tells us that we said Kol HaShadibra Hashem Naseh, and later on we have also Naseh V'Nishma. That's a fundamental distinction between the two Pashios. One refers to the fact that we accept upon ourselves the all of mitzvahs, and the other indicates Naseh V'Nishma. Why that distinction? How do you explain that distinction? Beyond that, Krisis HaBrias that Moshe Rabbeinu did occurs after Mishpatim, not in Yisrael. Why is that? According to Biskurov, it's understood because here we're talking about a higher level of commitment that takes place. Beyond that, the first time around, the Torah says, Vayan kolam kol echad vayomru kol hadvarim asher dibra Hashem naseh. The second time around, it says, Vayomru kol asher dibra Hashem naseh v'nishma. You don't have kol echad, you don't have kol hadvarim. There are a number of very fundamental distinctions in the language between Parshas Yisrael and Parshas Mishpatim. And it's very clear, just to explain what the Biskurov says, it could be explained in a number of different ways, but certainly there are two different types of Kabbal Sol Mitzvahs. And we can understand in light of Choshev Mishpat. There's one type of Hischaivus or Shibud, where a person actually simply accepts upon himself a certain commitment. That's what we call Kabbal Sol Mitzvahs, is a type of commitment that a person makes. Rabbi Natan, for example, has two different types of Shibud. He has what he calls a Shibud Aguf, and a person borrows money. So on the one hand, you're indebted to pay back the money that you borrow. The Gemara says, Piron called Mitzvahi. On the other hand, there's also something called Shibin the Chosim. If I borrow money through a shtar, so then my property is also mortgaged to pay for that chob. If I don't pay back the amount of money that I owe, then my property becomes indebted, my property becomes mortgaged to pay back the chob. So these are two different types of Shibudim. One is called the Shibin Aguv, a personal indebtedness, and one is a Shibin the Chosim. One is a indebtedness of my property. But here, what the Torah apparently is trying to tell us, we look at the first Pasha, the Pasha in Yisrael, or what the Rishonim call Kabbal Sol Mitzvahs and Lair Shibudim, that's basically what it is. It's a fundamental Shibud, the same as a lover to a Malveh. When a lover borrows money from a Malveh, so he's Meshavet himself. He actually commits himself to paying back the Chov. Piroh Chov Mitzvahi, it's a kind of Hischaivus. The Gemara says that even to the point of Glimma Mialkas Poi, that the Malveh can go ahead and take the cloak off my back. You take my clothing. If I don't pay back the Malveh, so that he can actually take my clothing. The Gemara actually in the Medrash Chazal speak about even Hashem is Barach after such a Shibud that we commit ourselves, he's Yored and Chaseinu. We can go back and take our property. That's one type of commitment. However, that is not the only relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. The relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael goes way beyond that. And it's a relationship of what the Torah calls Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim. And what does Avodim mean? It doesn't say Kili B'nei Yisrael Meshubadim. It says Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim. And Eved, of course, is a completely different type of relationship that an Eved has with its owner. Shibud is a Hischaivus, but the Malveh does not own me, does not own the Loveh. However, between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, there's a Yachas of Abdus. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otzeich, Eretz Mitzrayim, Avodahim, L'Avodim, L'Avodim. We are Avodim to Hashem Yisbarach, which means that He owns us. Hashem owns us physically. He owns our emotions, He owns our bodies, He owns every aspect of us, belongs to Hashem. And that's why there's a Mechilta that says in the Pasuk, V'yatem Tiyuli, Mamachas Kohanim, B'goy Kadosh, V'yatem Tiyuli, Kinuyimli. The idea of a person who's an Eved Hashem, and Eved Hashem means, where the Radak writes in the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, an Eved Hashem is someone who has no Hesach Hadas from Hashem is Barach. He's totally committed to Hashem, to the point where literally 24-7, he has this relationship with Hashem is Barach, with the Almighty. And so therefore, these are really the two parshas that are being described here. One parsha speaks about Shibud, Hischaivus, the fact that we have a Shubud to Hashem Yisbarach, that's the parsha of Yisrael. The second parsha, Mishpatim, which the Biskurov calls Kenisa Libris, is a much higher level. It's a level of Abdus, a level of becoming a servant, a level of not being Masiyah Dasim Hashem Yisbarach, a level of Kinyan to Hashem Yisbarach, a totally different level of commitment, a totally different relationship that one should have to Hashem Yisbarach. So therefore, how do we go about, shall we say, clearly whatever we have comes about as a result of two stages. Stage number one is a Shibud, and that's why people come to Yeshiva to learn for a year or two or three or 50 or 60 or 70, whatever it may be. That creates hopefully a Shibud to Hashem Yisbarach, but that's not sufficient. That's not the highest level. The highest level that a Jew actually acquires is the level where one becomes an Eved Hashem. An Eved Hashem means you are coming to Ribbono Shel Olam. It's no longer a simple Shibud, but you are in effect His property, as it were. And that madrega means you can't be Masiyach Das and Hashem is brought in for one moment. There's no Hesach Hadas whatsoever. So this, I believe, is the distinction between all the different formulations that we have in Yisrael and the one that we have in Pasha Mishpatim. In the case of Yisrael, the Torah simply tells us, Vayan kolam kol echad vayomu kol asher dibra Hashem naseh. Here we're talking about the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael as one entity that includes individuals, each one of us individually, responded to Hashem Yisbarach, we're committing ourselves to Him, and in effect, that commitment is going to be a kind of shibud, a kind of ischaivus. But an ischaivus, as I said, at the lowest of levels. However, in the Pasha of Mishpatim, it's a totally different kind of connection. Here, Hashem Yisbarach wanted Klal Yisrael to be makne, a very guf, a very neshama, to renounce our individual rights. Hashem owns everything. There it's a connection no longer of shibudim, but a connection of abdus, a connection of, shall we say, of kinyan, a connection which is much, much higher than that which is mentioned in the Pasha of Yisrael. That's why the second time around, it says no longer kol echad and kol ha'am, but rather nasa v'nishma. Each person individually is surrendering himself to Hashem Yisbarach. If you will, I can compare it to another kind of distinction in halacha that we see also. There's a distinction between two types of kedusha. There's something called kedushas haguf and something called kedushas damim. Kedushas damim is when a person gives something to a hegdish, and essentially, what am I giving to hegdish? I'm giving to hegdish a chair. The chair is not going to go on the mizbeach, or the table is not going to go on the mizbeach, but I give the value of that item to hegdish. That's called a kedushas damim. The second type of kedusha is a person offers up an animal to hegdish, a kedushas haguf. The animal actually is being offered up on the mizbeach. It has an inherent kind of kedusha, and that kedusha is the very essence of the item itself. In the case of kedushas damim, the kedusha is only related to the object. It's a medium through which I obtain kedusha, but it's not inherent in the object itself. That's why, when it comes to kedushas damim, there's pidyon. The person can actually redeem kedushas damim. Or there's another nafkamina, legabi mi'ila. That mi'ila actually, in kedushas damim, the kedusha disappears. In kedusha guf, the kedusha can never disappear. It's inherent in the guf hadavar itself. So these two types of kedusha represent the two pashas that the Torah is referring to. The pasha in Yisrael refers to, as I said, a kind of kedushas damim, a kind of shibur, a kind of ischaivus, a very general nature. Hashem, the other pasha, Mishpatim, that we read this coming week, refers to a kinyan that we are coming to Hashem Yisbarach, we are His avodim, we are His servants. It is not simply a commitment of shibud, but it's a commitment of kedushas haguf. I can't separate myself from Hashem Yisbarach b'chlal. I think you more or less understand what I'm saying, and the reason why am I saying this, I'll tell you why I'm saying this. It's very clear that many, many people who study Torah, and Baruch Hashem, all of us study Torah, and have opportunities that study Torah. So we certainly, all of us are trying to achieve, minimally, the first level. The level of Shibud, the level of Ischaivus, and that level is certainly a very significant level, a very important level, one that all of us have to try to obtain. However, the second level, of not being Masiyach Das in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, is something which is obviously much more difficult to obtain. V'haraya, Sunday Super Bowl, where people can devote an entire day to the Super Bowl. As I said, inherently there's no Issur B'davar. There's nothing wrong with looking at the Super Bowl. The contrary, people have to relax and people have to enjoy themselves. It's a good thing that people have the opportunity, but when people devote literally between 12 hours, and actually it wasn't just 12 hours, because the next few days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, even on the plane going to Chicago, I was sitting next to three people, the entire flight, 2.5 hours, 2 hours actually and 50 minutes, they devoted to an analysis of the entire game that had taken place 5-6 days ago. For 2 hours I was subjected to this analysis, more than 2 hours, unbelievable. And they were making diyukim, and they were saying lumbus, and they had kedusha teila. It was just unbelievable. Both of them happened to be Jewish. Two Jewish business people, and both of them happened to be from. And both of them happened to be sitting next to me on the plane going to Chicago. Next to me means right behind me. Right behind me, they were sitting on the plane going to Chicago. For 2 hours, they were discussing the giant game. 2 hours of analysis that I was zochet to hear of their brilliant chidusha Torah, scintillating Rav Chaims and what have you, on the giant game. And it was just amazing to me how the entire week was devoted to this. And at Kadei Kakwa, they were even selling some matbeah, some coin, that would be signed by all the giant players for $149 to the first 1,000 people who would be zochet in this incredible coin. And I said to myself that even though, as I said, I think it's a harmless kind of recreation, and a recreation halavai, this should be the only recreation that people engage in, it wouldn't be so bad, but how is it possible for a Jew to come to the madrega of being coming to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam if one devotes this enormous amount of time dafka to these kind of endeavors, and it becomes the very centerpiece of my entire life, the very epicenter. Everything revolves around the Giants, and everything revolves around whatever sport I'm involved in. I'm in the United States, what I can see, the whole United States is one chetz of chapanash. Essentially, that's all it is. People go to restaurants and just talk about where they're going to eat, what I'm going to eat for lunch, what I'm going to eat for supper. It's just amazing how many restaurants there are in New York City, Baruch Hashem, Ken Yirbu. But at the same time, the entire gestalt and the entire mindset is one of Gedolei Legima, as the Gemara says. So I'm a Kaim Gemara, Gedolei Legima. Namely, that everything revolves around vittles, or victuals, or food. That becomes the very essence of my life, food and sport and what have you. How can a person possibly ever come to the Madrega being an Eved Hashem, of not being Masiyah Das and Rebbe Shalom, if that's the focus of one concern? I don't know how it's possible. Maybe the Rabbanim here could explain it to me. I personally don't understand it. And I'm still not the Madrega. I'm holding by Halavai, by the first Madrega, of being Meshubba Takadosh Baruch Hu. But certainly the second Madrega, there's no way one can come to it unless one is really devoted, shall we say, B'lev Nefesh, to Limud HaTorah, and to trying to elevate oneself to the highest levels of Limud HaTorah and Dvekes B'Hashem. I mentioned something that I've mentioned before, that I'm very fond of, and I hold it's La'amita Shel Torah. When I learned in yeshiva here in Eretz Yisrael, 1971-72, I learned in yeshiva called Itri, and I mentioned already a number of times that I wanted to call my parents, Aleihem HaShalom, and I had to go to the main post office in Yerushalayim. There were no cell phones and no telephones, and there was no telephone in the entire yeshiva. Yeshiva did not own a telephone. Not one telephone in the entire yeshiva. So I had to go to Yerushalayim. I went the first week in Chodesh Elul, actually before Shari Yom Kippur. I wanted to speak to my parents, and then I encountered 300 people lined up for four or five telephones in the main post office ahead of me. I didn't plan on sitting or waiting there for, I don't know, 10 hours or whatever it was in order to use the telephone, and so I left. And that year, a year and a half, I was in Eretz Yisrael. I wasn't able to call my parents. Every time I went to the post office, the place was jam-packed, because no one had telephones. And people would go to the main post office to call, and I wasn't able to call my parents the entire year. I wrote them a letter once a week, just in terms of relating what happened in my life and things of that sort. So, at that time, I was in yeshiva, and yeshiva was in Talpiot. It was actually Talpiot, which is today a rather massive Ezor Tassiyah, an industrial area. There are many wedding halls in Ezor Tassiyah in Talpiot, and people shop there and go there for chasanas and what have you. But then it was completely desolate, totally. There was nothing there. Zero. It's hard to believe that Talpiot was such a built-up area. There was nothing there. And there were two or three buses that came to the yeshiva in the course of the day. Actually had to walk about five or six blocks in order to get to the bus. And that was it. And so more or less we were stuck in the yeshiva. So what could we do? We had no choice but to sit and learn. There was nothing else to do, literally. And if you didn't enjoy learning, you obviously would have left the yeshiva. So I reminded myself always of the story of Rabbi Akiva is quoted twice in Shas. Once in the Dorim, once in the Tzubis. Named Rabbi Akiva, who was a poor shepherd, who married the daughter of one of the wealthiest people in Yerushalayim. She was the daughter of Bas Kalba Savua. And when he married her, the father-in-law was so angry. Rabbi Akiva, more or less, he disowned this couple. And he decided that he took a neder. They will not be neder for me, bichlal. They won't have any hanah for me, because he didn't want his daughter to marry Rabbi Akiva, went to sit and learn Torah, etc., etc. Anyway, so there are two different descriptions of what exactly happened. Rabbi Akiva came back after many years of learning. There are two descriptions found in Shas. One is found in Tzuvis, and one is found in the Dorim. And they are rather markedly different one from the other. And it always troubled me. How do you explain the distinction? The distinction is the following. In Tzubis, the Mishnah writes that a person goes out to learn, and Tzubis writes over there in Tzubis, when a person goes out to learn, after a number of years, you become a Talmud Chacham. Someone learns Torah, becomes a Talmud Chacham. You sit and learn Beis Medrash, so you learn Makkos and Sanhedrin, and then a few other Masechtas here and there, and after a while, you become a Talmud Chacham. The Ran writes in the Dorim, and the Ran says that the reason why the father-in-law of Akiva was ready to remat your ned there is because when he saw Rabbi Akiva, he said that had I known he would learn Perak Echad Balacha Achas, I never would have taken the neder. So that was the basis for the Hataras Nedarim, based on the fact that he would know Perak Echad Balacha Achas. And yet, the other Tesis Ksuva seems to indicate that once he met Rabbi Akiva, who was a great Tana, and he was a great Talmud Chacham, so he said, had I known he'd become a great Talmud Chacham, I would have taken the neder. So how do you explain the discrepancy between these two rather extreme positions? On the one hand, Perak Echad Balacha Achas, on the other hand, a great Talmud Chacham. And the answer is Pasha. If a person is, shall we say, committed to learning in the yeshiva and doesn't go out for supper every other night with parent X and parent Y, doesn't spend a week here and a week there, and does not simply waste one's time, but rather devotes one's time to the Sdarim, comes to Minyanim, comes to Sdarim, or what have you, then maybe there's a possibility, even though it's not a simple possibility, that one might become a great Talmud Chacham. But if people behave the way most yeshiva bachurim behave, American yeshivas, which is not just this yeshiva, Torah Shraga, but all the other yeshivas, there's no difference. Sadu Dara Chadu. And they're busy, shall we say, not using their time properly in the morning, not learning the entire Zman of the Seder, not coming to Minyanim, not coming on time, Bichlal, not showing up at all. How does one expect to become a Talmid Chacham? Halavai, once you come out of the year, with Perek Echad Balachachas. And that's what's happening. And Perek Echad Balachachas is very far from the Pasha Nisra, from the Pasha of Shibud, from the Pasha of Hischaibis to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Doesn't even come near that. But still, to expect the second Pasha, one becomes a great Talmid Chacham, where one is an Eved to Hashem, one is not Masiach Das, that really requires an enormous amount of effort. That requires tremendous commitment, incredible commitment, and something which, of course, is not exactly whatever the average person is going to achieve in the course of their year or two, if you will, in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, it's my tefillah, my hope and prayer, that Hashem is Baruch should give you the seichel, the wisdom, that you should strive not only for the first Pasha, the Pasha of Yisrael, to be Meshuvah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be Mischayat HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as I said, there's nothing wrong with watching a Giants game. I'm personally not opposed to it. I even saw at least a half hour of the Giants, or any other sport for that matter, but there's nothing wrong with it, as I told Aaron Rosenblum Shlita. There's nothing wrong inherently with watching a sports game. But trust me, if you spend an entire day devoted to that, and spend the rest of the week in analysis, and prior, post-game, pre-game analysis, which again, there's nothing inherently harmful with that. But you're certainly not going to be able to come anywhere near, not either the Pasha in Yisrael, of Shivut HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayvus Hashem Yisbarach, and certainly not the Pasha of being an Eved Hashem, of not being Masiach Das, Ribbono Shel Olam, and coming to a Madrega, where you are coming to Ribbono Shel Olam, B'lev Nefesh. Of course, it's our tefillah, it's my hope and prayer that all you should be zochet to both pashas. You should be zochet to the shibud, but in order to do that pasha properly, you have to be committed. And Baruch Hashem, many of you are on your way, and you're on the derech to becoming committed to Hashem Yisbarach. Trust me that, again, when I'm a bit older than you, you're much wiser than I am, you're smarter than I am, you're probably more scintillatingly brilliant than I am. I have one thing over you, and that is age. Age before beauty, as they say. And with age comes a bit of experience. And ultimately in my life I realized that a lot of the pleasures that people seek when they're young are, to a large extent, they are not pleasures that are of an enduring nature. They're not pleasures that you bring a person to Netzach. The idea of learning Torah is to bring a person to Netzach Letzachim. And even though some of you may be too young to realize that, but little by little I think you are beginning to come to that Hakara. The world out there is a world which is, number one, not only cruel, and a world that's not only involved in vanity, and a world that's not only involved in egotistical behavior from beginning to end, all day and all night. It's a world that people are only interested in searching for pleasures and what have you. That's the entire world. One big kapanash from beginning to end. And unfortunately, it affects the Jewish world as well. Rabbi Nachman writes, V'yes krisl tzach hazidl tzach. What goes on in the non-Jewish world is very much, shall we say, reflected in the Jewish world as well. And Baruch Hashem, you have the schus of 1 year or two of being in Eretz Yisrael, being able to escape that entire environment, the whole Super Bowl, Yom Tov kind of environment, and halavai should be zocheh not only to come into the shibud of the Pasha of Yisrael, but halavai should be zocheh as well to come into the Eved Hashem, the non-Hesach Hadas of the Pasha Mishpatim, the idea of Knesset LeBris. That's really what the yeshiva is all about. That's what learning Torah and Eretz Yisrael is all about. And halavai, at least for even a short period of time that you're in the yeshiva, you should come to recognize these two levels and see if I can possibly achieve not only level number one, but halavai level number two as well.